हरे। जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोरानंदना ब्रज जन रंगना, यशोरानंदना ब्रज जन रंगना, यमुना तीरा वन सारी, यमुना तीरा वन सारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोरानंदना ब्रज जन रंगना, यशोरानंदना ब्रज जन रंगना, यमुना तीरा वन सारी, यमुना तीरा वन सारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस विभ्राज काचार्य अष्टोत्तरस्तु श्री श्रीमद् एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की जय। इस्कान पांडव आचार्य श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय। निताय गौर प्रेमानंदे हरे हरि बोल समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय। हा गौर श्री असमुद्रवती आवेश श्री श्री गुरु गौरांग। ओम नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय, नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय, नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 4, The Atrocities of King Kamsa. Text number 26. Evam, yes, this is right. Etat, what you have said. Mahabhaga, O great personality. Yata, as Vedasi, you are speaking. Dehinam, about living entities accepting material bodies. Ajnana Prabhava, by the influence of ignorance. Aham Dhi, this is my interest, false ego. Swapara Iti, this is another's interest. Bhida, differentiation. Yata, because of such a conception of life. This is Vasudev speaking in response to Kamsa's speech. Evametam Mahabhaga Yatavarasi Dehinam Ajnana Prabhavaham Dhi Papariti Bhidhayata Evametan Mahabhaga Yata Vedasi Dehinam Ajnana Prabhavahandi Papariti Bhidhayata Evametan Mahabhaga Yata Vedasi Dehinam Ajnana Prabhavahandi Sapareti Bhidayata. Ladies. Translation. O great personality, Kamsa, only by the influence of ignorance does one accept the material body and bodily ego. What you have said about this philosophy is correct. Persons in the bodily concept of life, lacking self-realization, differentiate in terms of this is mine and this belongs to another. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Everything is done automatically by the laws of nature, which work under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is no question of doing anything independently, For one who has put himself in this material atmosphere is fully under the control of nature's laws. Our main business, therefore, should be to get out of this conditioned life and again become situated in spiritual existence. Only due to ignorance does a person think, I am a demigod, I am a human being, I am a dog, I am a cat. Or when the ignorance is still further advanced, I am God. Unless one is fully self-realized, one's life of ignorance will continue. Om Jnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militamena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Evam Etan Mahabhaga Yatha Vadasi Dehinam Ajnana Prabhavaham Dhi Swapareti Bhidha Yataha. O great personality Kamsa, only by the influence of ignorance does one accept the material body and bodily ego. What you have said about this philosophy is correct. Persons in the bodily concept of life, lacking self-realization, differentiate in terms of this is mine and this belongs to another. Kamsa seems to have had mixed motives, if not completely impure motives, in his speech to Devaki and Vasudeva. But they accepted what he said. And Prabhupada did also. And it doesn't really come up in Prabhupada's purports that Kamsa is just trying to get himself off the hook and is really being duplicitous in what he's speaking. There are a couple of places at the end of the purport, just like in text 21, a few verses back. So he says, Prabhupada says, Kamsa admitted his own fault, but whatever he had done was under the control of Providence. Kamsa might have been the immediate cause of death for Devaki's sons, but the remote cause was their past deeds. This was an actual fact. So here we see Prabhupada not disagreeing with Kamsa's point of view. The point there is that Vasudeva and Devaki are responsible for their own suffering. It's their karma. And then on Friday's purport also, it says, thus they accepted Kamsa's words, Prabhupada ends the purport. So again today, we see Vasudeva saying, Evam, Etat, what you have said, yes, this is right. So Vasudeva is bringing out a point that's one of the themes of what Vasudeva was saying. What I'm thinking, what my consciousness is, ahamdi. So he translates that as, this is my interest, in other words, in parentheses, false ego, and swapara iti, this is another's interest. So here we see Prabhupada, the focus is on interest. I have my interest, and another person has their interest. Vidha. This differentiation, bidha, is like bheda, as in achintya bheda, bheda tattva. So bidha, so differentiation, this is considered an illusion. I have my interest and you have your interest. So in the translation, Prabhupada takes it slightly different. You can see how this all centers around the same idea of ahankar, but he says people differentiate in terms of or persons in the bodily concept of life, lacking self-realization, differentiate in terms of this is mine and this belongs to another. So now it seems to be talking about not interest, but possessions. This is my family, this is my house, this is my car, this is my so on, all these things. Aham Mameti, we hear also from Prahlad Maharaj. I'm thinking, Aham, I am this body, and Mama, this is mine. All of these things belong to me. So both of these are considered to be part of the bodily concept of life and Maya. This is my interest, this is your interest, this is my possession, this is your possession. And then in the purport, only due to ignorance does a person think, I am a demigod, I am a human being, I am a dog, I am a cat, and so on. So here we see, more specifically, I'm this body and you're that body. So we have three different ways that this is. And Prabhupada elaborates on this, these two phrases here, aham di and swapara iti. So the first thing that struck me was this idea that this is Maya, this is illusion, this is my interest and that's your interest. I thought, well, isn't that impossible not to live that way? How could I not have a separate interest from somebody else? I have my life, obviously I'm always thinking about my life, my health, my job, the obstacles I have in life. I'm not thinking all day about yours. I'm thinking about mine, and you're thinking about yours. This is seems to be just natural. So how can it be? What does it mean to have no separate interests? It almost sounds like impersonalism. We're all one. There's only one interest. We're all one. We can't have our own interest. In fact, I was thinking in the context of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam is a very radical approach. We know, of course, in the conversation between Narada and Vyasa, how the way Narada speaks to Vyasa is so heavy. Basically, jugupsitam dharmakate mishasatam. He condemns, verily condemned. What you've done, Vyasadeva, by writing these Vedas, that's condemned. So heavy. He's condemning the Vedas. And not too long ago in an editorial, I quoted Prabhupada, his response to that Professor Hopkins, who asked him to give one verse that sort of summarized his own teachings, Prabhupada's teachings, and what the point he was trying to make, and Prabhupada quoted this verse from the first canto, dharmasya hyapavargyasya nartortaya pakalpate. The dharma is meant for apavarga. So that's a revolutionary statement, because dharma is usually meant for artha. According to the Vedas, dharma is meant for artha. Dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. So we can see how that fits in with this idea. This is my family, this is my occupation, this is my dharma, and through my dharma, I'm going to get artha, I'm going to get what I want, basically what I need. Artha means that desirable thing, something that's worth, has some value. What I value, whether it's money or whatever, often it's just translated as money or economic development, as Prabhupada translates it. So through my dharma, I'm going to get the wealth that I need through my occupation. Then I'll get kama. Kama doesn't just mean lust, but it means satisfaction of my senses. We have to have that. We have to eat and we have to so on. We have to get our material desires fulfilled. And then eventually, somewhere down the road, we can start thinking about moksha. When we get old, we take sannyas and think about moksha. But the Bhagavatam says, no, you go from dharma to apavarga. You go from dharma to moksha and you skip what's in between. Your dharma is meant for liberation right from the beginning. So that's why dharma projita kaitavotra. Right from the beginning of the Bhagavatam, we get this idea, well, this is really a transcendental literature. It's talking about transcending right from the beginning. All other religion is, any religion that has a fruitive tinge to it, any dharma that's meant for artha and kama, Bhagavatam is rejecting that. This dharma of the Bhagavatam is meant for upavarga, for liberation, for getting free of pa-pa-ba-ba-ma-ma. That probably would give that pavarga, that explanation. For different symptoms of material existence and suffering in material existence using the Sanskrit alphabet. And
interpreting the syllables in different ways. So upavarga means beyond this suffering of this material world. So the Bhagavatam is for that. And dharma projita kaitava. So kaitava means cheating, but it also just Prabhupada translates it in the Bhagavatam as tinged with fruitive activity. Or something. He mentions the phrase fruitive activity. So any dharma that's fruitive in nature, what do we mean by fruitive? This is, I don't know if Prabhupada came up with this word, it's not in the dictionary, it's one of our special words. So of course we know what it means. Fruitive means you want the fruit. So you want the fruit of what you're doing, you want some benefit from what you're doing. So the Bhagavatam rejects that. The second verse of the Bhagavatam, after the invocation verse, you can say the first verse, Satyam Param Dimahi. Actually, that also shows how this is a transcendental literature. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya begins by glorifying Vasudev, Krishna. Satyam Param Dimahi. This is a reference to the Gayatri Mantra, the Brahma Gayatri. We learned this from Jiva Goswami. Gayatri Bhashya. The Garuda Purana says that one of the characteristics of the Bhagavatam is that it's a commentary on the Gayatri, as well as the Vedanta Sutra and the Vedas and the Puranas and so on. So it's transcendental literature, and this Dharma Projita, Prabhupada explains the significance of the word Projita. Ujita, Ujita means to reject. So it's rejecting Kaitava Dharma, but the prefix pra, basically broadens the scope of what's being rejected, expands the meaning. So you might think, okay, that it's kicking out fruitive activity or karma kanda. It's rejecting karma kanda, okay. But no, it's also rejecting jnana kanda, or at least jnana kanda that's aiming for impersonal liberation. That's Prabhupada's interpretation of that. Projita means that it kicks out not just karma kanda, but also renunciation and the path, you could say, followed by Prakashananda Saraswati and those sannyasis of Varanasi that Lord Chaitanya spoke with. What was their idea? They were also renouncing this world, but because they were Mayavadis, they wanted to merge into the existence of God, become God. So it's also rejecting that kind of dharma. You may think it's dharma to study Vedanta, give up all your material obligations, renounce this world, and just focus on Vedanta. But if your motive is to merge into the existence of God, that's also rejected by this Srimad Bhagavatam. So what does it mean to not have a separate interest, to not have your own interest? Of course, the easy answer for us is, well, we have to have Krishna's interest. Because when you have Krishna's interest, then you have everybody else's interests at heart. That's the Vaishnava's way of looking at things. Even the yogi, there's the verse in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita is called Dhyana Yoga. So it's about meditation. It's specifically about the yogis and their meditation. Of course, Prabhupada ties everything to bhakti. Of course, there is bhakti yoga meditation. But text 32 of the sixth chapter, Atmopanyena Sarvatra Samam Pasiti Yorjuna Sukam Va Yadi Va Dukam Sa Yogi Paramo Mataha. He is a perfect yogi who, by comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings in both their happiness and their distress, O Arjuna. So this is a way, of course, of seeing oneness. You see that everybody is suffering and you have compassion for everyone. This whole idea of compassion, of course, is quite interesting. Recently, I just look at a word on the database. So I looked at compassion and there's something like 3,000 something references to compassion. So I said, well, I can't read all 3,000 of these to see what Prabhupada said, but let me read some of them. So I looked at about 50 or so, tried to see if I could detect a pattern. So 50 out of 3,000 is not statistically significant, as they would say. But it kind of gave me an idea of how Prabhupada used the word compassion. So I found, what I looked at, two themes that Prabhupada used the word compassion especially for. One was he spoke of Krishna's compassion for the living entity. And second was he spoke of the Vaishnava's compassion and the Jiva's compassion. And practically invariably, Prabhupada used it to say why the devotees preach. The devotees preach because of compassion. So the Vaishnava devotees feel compassion. The yogi, the bhakti yogi, feels compassion. And how is that compassion manifest? It's manifest by trying to give others a Krishna consciousness. That is always the way, Prabhupada, at least in everything that I read. When he talks about showing compassion, it was always about giving Krishna consciousness to others. So they can say that this is how we apply this principle here, of not having our own interest, not identifying with our own body and our own possessions, but we sacrifice pranarata diyadacha shriya acharanam sada. Lord Chaitanya said that one should use one's prana, one's very breath of life. Prana means breath, but it also, you can just say it means your life. Arta, your wealth. Dhyā, your intelligence. Vācha, your words. Use those. Shreya ācāraṇam sadā. For the benefit of others. Tell us what Krishna consciousness is. We're all members of the Krishna consciousness movement, Śrīla Prabhupāda's movement. That's the purpose of it. The purpose of it is to bring ourselves together, to come together ourselves, associate, to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, and to spread that to others. This is the Vaishnava mood. We have it epitomized by Prahlad Maharaj. Of course, Prahlad, if anybody could have had his own self-interest, it was Prahlad. What was happening to him, he didn't think, oh, woe is me, why is this happening to me? That's the way we tend to think, why me, why not the other guy? This is one of somebody in psychology, they say, why do people like to watch, sometimes they have traffic reports on the radio, and they say, you know, there's a bottleneck on the interstate because of gawkers, they say. There's been an accident, and there's a gawker's bottleneck, because traffic slows down, even in the, you know, if the accident's in the northbound lane, still it slows down in the southbound lane, because everybody is turning their heads, they want to see. So psychologists say, why do we want to see disaster? Because we think, lucky it's not me. I'm glad it's not me. So whether we're that cruel-hearted or not, I'm not sure, but that's a suggestion that's there. So it may be, because we certainly feel worse when it's us. That's our tendency. So Prahlad, he could definitely have thought that way. Well, I'm really suffering. I feel sorry for myself. But he didn't feel that way. He said, my consciousness is merged in the nectar of Krishna Katha. I'm swimming in the ocean of nectar, hearing Krishna Katha. So for me, I'm in bliss. But shocheta to vimukacheta sa indriyata maya sukaya bharamudvahato vimudhan. Still I feel some lamentation. Shoche. Krishna says to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, gatasuna gatasun cha nanu shochanti pandita. The pandit doesn't have any shocha, lamentation. But here we see Prahlad Maharaj being described, he says, Soche Tato, I have some lamentation. So how can the pure devotee have lamentation? Well, it's not for himself, and it's not for their, he knows the real cause. He knows the real cause of their suffering. That's why it gets a little tricky, you think. Well, is he feeling compassion for their suffering? And Bhagavad Gita says you're not supposed to feel compassion. Even when we read in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says, Arjuna, naturally as a Vaishnava, he felt compassion. But as soon as Krishna starts speaking to him, then basically the idea is his compassion is useless. And Prabhupada says compassion for the dress of a drowning man is useless. So was his compassion okay? Because he's a Vaishnava and he naturally has a compassionate heart? Or was it bad? So there was something wrong with that compassion because of the repercussions of it. He was allowed to neglect his duty because of that compassion. And it has to be, of course, seen in the proper way, and how one uses that compassion and really solves the person's problem. That's what's important. So Prahlad Maharaj, he was feeling some compassion. He says, I see that these mudhas, they're lifting the burden of material life. It's such a heavy burden. Badamudvahato vimudhan. So I feel sorry for them. So then in the next verse, what is the next verse? Prayena deva munayo savimuktikama. Manam charanti vijanena paratanishta. Naitam vihaya kripana vimamuksha eko naitam. So in the very next verse, Prahlad says, I'm not like those persons, those yogis who just go off to some place and meditate for themselves, swaparartha nishta, for their own benefit. That's selfish interest, to be a yogi and to go to the Himalayas just to meditate for your own liberation. The goal of life may be a liberation, but it's not only liberation. It's also compassion. The benefit of others. So Prahlad says, those who take the vow of Mauna, Maunam Charanti Vijane, they travel to a secluded place to meditate. Naitam Vihaya Kripanam Vimamukcha Eko. They're interested in only their own liberation, and they reject everybody else. They just leave them. They don't try to help them. But what the devotee does, he lives among them, the fools and rascals. The devotee doesn't go hide for his own benefit. He lives among them, even at the risk of his own spiritual life. Or you can say because he has so much conviction, the preacher we were just hearing, the preacher has faith and also scriptural knowledge. So that fortifies the preacher, the second-class devotee, Madhyamadhikari. He can preach and he's not going to fall down. So that person shows compassion and he shows that he makes sacrifices for the benefit of others. That's one of the duties of Krishna consciousness, to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. How Prabhupada was always urging us to do that for the benefit of others. So that, of course, when you follow the order of the spiritual master, try to help him in his mission. We all have different roles to play in supporting Srila Prabhupada's mission. So when we do that, then naturally, of course, our hankar, it goes away. It burns up in the fire of the Sankirtan movement. It burns up in the fire of the Sankirtan yajna. Then that takes away all of these things. And we see for everyone's benefit. We see from Krishna's perspective, we can say, from the perspective of the spiritual master. Let me give a nice example. We talk about the shade of the lotus feet of the spiritual master. So someone gave a nice analogy. So if we're standing in the shade of the lotus feet of the spiritual master, then we have transcendental perspective. We get transcendental vision when we're standing in the shade of the lotus feet of the spiritual master, Guru Parachaya. So when we're under his shelter, then we can have transcendental vision and we can act in the way that's being described here by Vasudev, seeing everyone's interest and not just our own. Oh, verse again. Evam etam mahabhava yata varasi dehinam agyana prabhavaham dhi swapariti vidha yataha. O great personality Kamsa, only by the influence of ignorance does one accept the material body and bodily ego. What you have said about this philosophy is correct. Persons in the bodily concept of life, lacking self-realization, differentiate in terms of this is mine and this belongs to another. Questions or comments? You will be sure, Prabhu.
So how do we conceive, or how can we understand this differentiation between I, mine, or you and yours, even in Vaikuntha? Where Prabhupada explains that there are relationships in Vaikuntha, you know, they're even conjugal relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So if in the material world we are supposed to supersede that feeling, yet in Vaikuntha that feeling still exists.
Well, I think we get the answer in Srila Prabhupada's, you know, parenthesis, where he puts in parentheses here when he translates this word, aham di, this is my interest. Then he puts in parentheses, false ego. So there's false ego, but there's also real ego. And of course, that's a central point of our philosophy, that we do have an ego, and that ego is real. And when it's in connection with Krishna, there's nothing wrong with it. It's pure. Our own swarup. We have a swa. The swa means own. So we have something that's our own. We have our own form. We have our own relationship with Krishna. There's that nice exchange with Prabhupada where Prabhupada was saying something about, I think he quoted a prayer and he said, my Krishna. And the devotee asked, well, Prabhupada, how can you say my Krishna? He's not your Krishna. So Prabhupada said, yes, he is my Krishna. Doesn't love the ahankara, the false ego. He loves the real ego. So the point here is to get rid of the ahankara, the contaminated ego, to remove that covering and release that pure ego that Krishna is waiting to meet again and exchange again in pure rasa. So our philosophy is really central to our philosophy, is this idea of pure ego. And of course, what is the devotee thinking in the spiritual world? Really not for themselves. They're thinking, it may sometimes appear like that in the context of rasa, but what is it that the devotee's heart is the satisfaction of Krishna. They want to do it for Krishna in their own unique way. Everyone has their own talents in the spiritual world. This comes out when Krishna's with the cowherd boys. It says some of the more talented boys would sing for Krishna. So that means some of the boys can sing better than others in the spiritual world. So everyone is unique. They have their own unique talents, their own unique characteristics, their own unique ego. And Krishna reciprocates with them, each according to that. And that's his enjoyment. There's unlimited variety for his unlimited desire to exchange in different ways with the pure ego. Madhavati Guru.
Tells to give up all religion, and we see that Krishna says to Arjun the same thing there, and certainly Arjun is a very qualified person, and he can give up. My question is, what kind of adhikar does a person need to have to give up dharma? Because certainly we have seen ourselves in our movement, we have, you know, given up dharma and prematurely, and yet we do hear the Bhagavatam and it says to give it up. So I'm wondering, there must be some adhikar for us to do that.
Yeah, the Bhagavatam, as I was saying, as Krishna says, tells us to just reject everything. But we find that's true in principle. We tend to see that, practice is required. But it's gradual. It has to be. For most people, it's a gradual giving up. So while the principle is there, because we're spirit souls, we don't actually need this world. We don't need to have anything to do with this world. That in principle, it's true that if one is sufficiently pure, if the realization is strong enough, then one can do that. But we know there's the practical side, and the whole, of course, we have our nectar devotion, which addresses that point, really. What's implied in the whole theme of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is that it's a gradual process of coming to that stage. Even this morning also we heard that the Prabhupada was basically paraphrasing this Ado Shada Tatu Sadhu Sangha Bhajana Kriya. So first you start, you have a little bit of faith, then you associate with devotees, get initiation, you practice, and then you get nishta, then you get ruchi, you get firmness, and you get a faith. So we see there's a gradual development. So it's really difficult to just completely renounce everything. But on the other hand, Prabhupada, actually I quoted this verse from the sixth chapter, and he's this path of perfection, the perfection of yoga, is the perfection of yoga? One of these books, which is that basically just, it's all the lectures that Prabhupada gave in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So he talks so many places about yoga and about samadhi, and Prabhupada would talk about how his students were engaged in samadhi, because they were engaged 24 hours a day in Krishna consciousness. And he asked us to live our lives that way, to make everything in our lives connected with Krishna. Of course, sometimes Prabhupada did give us a lot of credit. There's one during one of those lectures, he says, so these people, they meditate for 15 minutes a day, and he scoffed at that. He said, but these devotees, they can sit and look at the deities 24 hours a day. So I don't know how many of us can do that, but in principle, we're absorbed in service to Krishna, meditation in Krishna. At least the advanced devotee can do that. Actually, a nice example of the difference. Srila Prabhupada, I was just giving class, I give a japa class that this devotee in New Jersey does on the telephone. Not japa class, now it's Bhagavatam class, Sunday class. So I gave this example of the difference in taste that Prabhupada had and his disciples had. I don't know, some of you may have been there, but I've heard this story of Prabhupada in Duvindavan on Janmashtami. He had the devotees reading for hours and hours and hours, and Prabhupada was just soaking up the nectar of the Krishna book, wide awake and enjoying it, and the devotees were all, you know, nodding. The sannyasis' dandas were falling like bamboo rods in the forest. Everyone was nodding out, and Prabhupada was just drinking, soaking up the nectar. So, obviously, there are different levels of taste and realization, and we have to judge ourselves. But the principle, of course, is there, and that's the goal that Bhagavatam is promoting. And as much as possible, we're supposed to try to live our lives so that we keep ourselves transcendentally situated or engaged in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada used to say, whenever you have a free moment, chant Hare Krishna, read Srimad Bhagavatam. Don't waste a moment. That was really a theme in so many of Prabhupada's lectures and letters also to his disciples. Don't waste a moment. And of course our occupation should be somehow connected. We support the temple, we support our families and Krishna conscious way of life and so on. We try to connect everything.
And the Manusmriti, it stated that it takes 1 billion of lifetime to achieve the human form, and it's meant for self-realization. So if you don't protect it, who will? See? So sometimes we've seen that in devotional service, devotees get sick and they go into extreme cases of trying to, you know, cure themselves or you know, heal their body or so. So to what extent do you think they should go to do these things? I mean, you know, it brings up a fundamental...
Well, Prabhupada wants us to take care of ourselves. Our bodies are Krishna's. Just like the example of Sanatana Goswami in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He was covered with sores. Wasn't it, Sanatana? From traveling through the Jarikanda forest. And he was going to kill himself. Actually, that was the context of it. He thought, my life is useless. His body is useless. I'm just going to throw myself in front of the rath cart, kill myself. So Lord Chaitanya said, what are you thinking? You think that's your body? That's not your body. That's my body. I have use for that. I have plans for that body. You have to do service with that body. So Prabhupada wanted us to be healthy, to live healthy lives in Krishna consciousness. And he would sometimes, you know, say that, why do you get sick? Because of lack of cleanliness or lack of regulation and so on. So we should get sick. Now, of course, it can become an obsession. And these days, of course, it's tricky because there's thousands of different ways, supposedly, that you can get cured. Everybody has the next sure thing. If you're not doing this, then you're going to get disease. If you're not taking this enzyme or this or that, whatever, then how can you think you're going to be healthy? So it gets really complicated, of course. But in principle, yeah, we should try to take care of our bodies, and when we get sick, we should try to cure ourselves so that we can serve Krishna. There's nothing wrong with that. That's part of Krishna consciousness, to take care of the vehicle that Krishna has given us for our service. Yes.
In reference to Marumati Didi's question, she was asking about Dharma, but really, if you look closely, Krishna never asked anyone to give up Dharma. I mean, Arjuna, it was his Dharma as a Kshatriya to fight. So Sarva Dharma Parityaja verse, he was not asking Arjuna to give up his Dharma. But the Acharyas explained there's some secret thing here, that Kurukshetra is the same place where years before the battle, Krishna had met the Brijabasis again after many, many years. So at that time, he saw that what is the difficulty they had that they met, and now after meeting again after so many years, they have to go back without him. So many of the statements that Krishna makes is reference to his own heart. So this verse, especially Sarva Dharma Parityaja, he's remembering that how the gopis especially gave up all Dharma. Because if you look closely, who else in all Krishna's pastimes gave up any Dharma? Nobody gave up any Dharma except them. They gave up their Laja Dharma, everything, in order to serve. That's why he said, Napareham Narvaju Sambhijam. That's why he quoted that verse, because they broke all Dharma in order to please him. But who else broke any Dharma? Everybody else followed.
Not to be contradictory, but this is what Prabhupada says in his purport. Actually, we also have Narada Muni. That's also a really kind of a heavy statement. Even if you give up all your dharmas to take to Krishna consciousness, even if you fall down, there's nothing wrong with that. So then, of course, here's the purport, the beginning of the purport. Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita 1866, the Lord has described various kinds of knowledge and processes of religion. Knowledge of the Supreme Brahman, knowledge of the Supersoul, knowledge of the different types of orders and statuses of social life, knowledge of the renounced order of life, knowledge of non-attachment, senses and mind control, meditation, etc. He has described in so many ways different types of religion. Now in summarizing Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that Arjuna should give up all the processes that have been explained to him. He should simply surrender to Krishna. That surrender will save him from all kinds of sinful reactions, for the Lord personally promises to protect him. So, what does it mean to give up everything and simply surrender to Krishna? For us, of course, it means under the guidance of the spiritual master. So we don't really have to speculate what it means to give up our dharma. Do we have to stop doing this or that? We have to work under the guidance of the spiritual master. We're giving up our independence in that sense, which is the worst kind of pseudo-dharma, is my own self-interest, selfish interest, and putting ourselves under the order of the spiritual master. That's our way of surrendering to Krishna. And it may include many different kinds of things that are dharma or not dharma, depending on how you look at them. For in pursuit of this one supreme dharma, which is our devotional service to Krishna. So we'll stop here. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jaya.